AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. The rally switch was flipped to on in the grain markets again this morning. South American crop issues are the reason behind the rally. After lost Brazilian bushels have turned into consistent export demand for old and new crop beans. Russia, Ukraine, glyphosate shortage, and another outdated corn-based ethanol study. We'll cover it all on today's Free For All.
Live from the cusp of the weekly work reprieve via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Free For All. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and yours truly, Davis Michelson. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, hey, buddy. Man. Great. How are you today? The sun is shining. It's warming up. It's going to be a beautiful day.
The sun is shining. It's warming up. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my phone for a little while. I lost my phone for like 20 minutes. And then I found it again, and it might as well be Christmas morning. Like, oh, I found it. Oh. We're just off to such a good start.
You know, you should have called me. I would have called you so that you could find your phone.
I appreciate
or sent me
that.
A text or something.
You've always got my back. Maybe,
yeah, man. Yeah.
I also got some new shoes in the mail, too. I'm wearing them right now. I'm telling you.
It's a good day. You better buy a lottery ticket.
I might. Well, I got to buy one Tuesday.
Well, yes,
I'm going Powerball on Tuesday. Yeah,
that's right. You should do that on Tuesday because it's 2/22/22
on a Tuesday,
and you're going to be taking a little time off to celebrate somebody's very special birthday, Davis.
I'm taking the day off for my birthday. I'm not going to do anything all day long. I'm going to lay on the couch in my underwear. Huh? How do you like them apples? It's going to be a great day.
Maybe that's a bit too much information.
Chocolate syrup spilled all over my T-shirt.
Stop it.
Barbecue sauce.
Stop it. I don't want to know anything more. Birthday cake frosting smeared on my face.
Oh, you better believe it.
Bad.
Better believe it.
Ugly.
Dog can't wait for me to go to sleep. Clean up on aisle 5.
Well, happy birthday, brother.
Thanks, man. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, U.S. financial and commodity markets will be closed Monday in observance of President's Day. U.S. government offices will also be closed for the holiday, meaning weekly updates such as grain inspections and weekly export sales will be delayed a day from their normal release days next week.
Yep, everything gets pushed back a day.
President Biden's top economic advisor tried to ease lawmakers' concerns about elevated inflation, saying that several factors in the coming months would help slow a steep rise in consumer prices over the last year. Cecilia Rouse, chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, noted, quote, "We believe that the factors that have been causing high inflation will begin to ease as COVID cases gradually decrease." And Chip, we reported earlier this week, inflation in January advanced at its fastest pace in nearly 40 years as the consumer price index rose 7.5% from a year earlier.
See, that's got to be based on a belief that a chunk of the inflation that we are seeing is based on scarcity and tied to labor issues and not producing everything that consumers want. So if there is something available, they'll pay for it no matter what it costs. We'll talk more about it with Jim and Sean. I think that'd be a good conversation topic for today.
Well, shipping experts, economists, and company executives say any end-of-year optimism that kinks in global supply chains would work themselves out in the first half of 2022 has faded, according to the Wall Street Journal. Ports in the U.S. and Europe are clogged, and prices for moving goods around the world are rising.
Well, there goes your opportunity to watch the inflation fade at the middle of the year.
Right?
We've still got the shipping issues. Yeah.
Police in Canada's capital began arrests of people protesting against COVID-19 mandates. The arrests began Thursday evening after police warned they would take action to remove a weeks-long encampment from the streets of Ottawa. Police also installed fencing and concrete barriers in some areas of the city. They set up checkpoints downtown and continued to warn protesters that further action was imminent. After the arrests began, hundreds of protesters remained in the encampment area. Chip,
we'll get an update from Sean Haney from about what's going on there.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov agreed to meet U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken for talks in Europe next week. That eased some anxiety in markets, bolstering risk sentiment and sending U.S. and European equity futures higher. The Russian military exercises are due to end on Sunday, with troop movements after that date seen as a key test of the Kremlin's intentions. Meanwhile, Chip, this as artillery exchanges were reported in eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, and evidently they're planning some nuclear drills, and Putin's going to show up and be there personally for it. To ease fears that the drill could turn into a real action.
I will push button. The Senate last night passed a three-week stopgap government funding bill. Continuing resolution runs until March 11. A proposal from six Senate Democrats to suspend the federal gas tax through the end of the year has been met with nearly universal criticism. And about 1,000 Porsches are estimated to be among some 4,000 vehicles left adrift on a burning cargo ship. The massive Felicity Ace was carrying thousands of Volkswagen cars when it caught fire near the Azores Islands in the Atlantic Ocean. Chip?
Yeah, and like you said, like 1,000 Porsches.
Yeah. Is it Porsches?
Porsches. I'd love to have a Porsche. Wouldn't you love to have a Porsche?
If I could pronounce it, I guess.
I don't know if I'd like a Porsche or not. It'd have to be a four-wheel drive, one of those kind of Porsches.
A Porsche four-wheel drive.
Yeah. That's what
not
it would
bad.
Have to be.
Yeah.
We'd
get
chips.
It'd
be kind of fun to have.
Yeah.
Fun to have. All right. Thank you, Davis.
You bet.
Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, Farm Journal's pork editor. Jennifer, welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing real fine. National Pork Board with some sustainability goals. What do we got?
Well, you know, I've been excited to hear about this. I've been knowing it's on the horizon and just waiting for it to come out. But you know, like everybody, we're all having to be able to show what we are doing to move towards, you know, progress when it comes to sustainability. And the pork industry has such a great story, and it's really exciting to see these goals come to fruition. I mean, they announced yesterday that they've improved pork production sustainability by using 75% less land, 25% less water, and 7% less energy than they did, you know, six decades ago, which is pretty cool. But their new goals really hone in not only on here's a goal that we want to achieve, but here are the metrics that we're going to use to evaluate if we're reaching those goals. And that's something that I don't think you see everywhere. And we've got a story up on Pork Business about it that goes into the details of those goals, but I just wanted to point out how exciting it is to see where they're going with this and just building on all the programs they've already had in the past to get this.
Yeah, and it's so important to tell the story and to tell the progress that has already been made in raising hogs, and then tack on, and we're going to do even better in the future, and here's how we're going to do it. It's a great story for the hog industry to tell, Jennifer.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I love what one producer told him. He said, we've got all the pieces and parts to the bus, but now we've got to put the bus together and drive it. And I think that's what this announcement yesterday is all about. Like, here's the bus.
Perfect.
We all got to get driving it forward and let people know.
Perfect. Good stuff. Thanks, Jennifer. We'll talk with you next week.
Thanks.
You bet. That is Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free-for-all coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats February 22nd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerepeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on a Friday. That means it's time for the free-for-all. Davis Michelson, put on the landowner editor hat and come along for the ride, buddy.
Will do. Will do.
All right. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Welcome, Sean.
It's great to be here, Chip. You know, the bump music made me think about how much better Aerosmith was, like, pump and earlier.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Really good. Really good. No doubt.
Great song.
No doubt.
Well, at some point, they started making the same makeout ballads just over and over and over and over again. That's the problem. Too many makeout ballads. Right.
That's right. And Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. I'm going to start it off with Jim. Jim, would you buy a Porsche at a fire sale?
I would buy a Porsche at any sale, but they rarely, if ever, go on sale.
Okay. The reason that I'm doing this, you guys, listen up. I have never, ever, ever in my life seen anybody put a link to the proper pronunciation of the name of a car in his report ever until today. Jim wanted to make sure that we all knew that it's Porsche, not Porsche.
Yeah, two syllables.
Two syllables.
The man loves his autos. He loves
his
autos.
Yes, I do.
And I remember when you had a Porsche, Jim, and you did love that vehicle.
Yep.
All right. Continuing resolution bill. Another one. Seriously. When are we going to get to the spending bill?
Probably March 10th, because March the 11th is the latest cutoff date from countdown to government shutdown, which won't happen. It's just, this is what's wrong with Washington, both political parties. They'll eventually come to an agreement that they should have a year ago on the spending bill. As far as agriculture, it does include the extension of the mandatory livestock price reporting, Chip. So there are some ag issues there.
Right. Yeah, and that. You went exactly where I wanted to go in the conversation, because the LPR, the mandatory livestock price reporting, is so important to the industry that to have it included in this extension, eventually it needs to be taken up in a bill on its own, doesn't it?
It should. And I don't know why it's, you know, permanent legislation. That's something I'm going to ask a couple of the farm state, lawmakers. And, you know, they should pull it out of this 3 to 5 year authorization. It needs to be permanent.
Permanent. Right. Yeah. I see no reason why it shouldn't be. Okay. That's a little bit of the groundwork that I wanted to cover on D.C. that's happening this week. It's not a real active week in D.C., is it, Jim?
No, they're out. They're both out until February 28th now.
Okay. Very good.
Chip, the nonsense of, like, you know, government shutdowns at this time, it just kind of goes over like a lead balloon, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah. Especially when it's used for posturing. Not to say a government shutdown isn't a big deal, but the posturing that happens on it just feels very ill-timed, considering all the stuff and what's happening right now and what should be worked on that would take a much higher priority than some of this sort of Mickey Mouse schoolyard kind of stuff that transpires when we go through this. Are we going to have a shutdown? Are we not going to have a shutdown kind of stuff?
Right.
Well, and it does sort of feel like, you know, like Sean, you know, like the little boy who cried wolf. And really, we've heard potential government shutdown is looming, and it's this huge, ominous thing, and nothing ever happens. Maybe if something would happen, and the government would actually shut down, and there would be complete, you know, insanity and anarchy across the country, sure, well, then it would have some teeth. But at this point, it's like, oh, they're just arguing, you know, we'll see you March 10th.
And I think Sean's point is, even if the government would shut down, I think there would be more just, you know, disgust.
Cheers and applause.
Well, there might be. But there would be more of the, I can't believe that these guys can't get together and make a decision.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then when they do come back and get an agreement, they pay all the government salaries that were shut off.
Right.
So these are grandstanding lawmakers from both political parties. And it's a reason why Congress's approval rating is lower than President Biden's, not quite as low as CNN and MSNBC.
Yeah.
Got all that right. In there.
Good Zing. One.
Good one. All right. Let's go north of the border. Haney, what a week it's been in Canada. My goodness.
Yeah, it is. Wow. Canadians doing their best to break our reputation for what we're known for, being such polite, accommodating people.
I'll admit, earlier this week, I said Canadians aren't being very Canadian.
quite true, yeah. In fact. Yeah. So the protests and the blockades are kind of coming to an end here, which, you know, many would applaud. The trouble is, Chip, it's not easy to figure out where Canadians sit on all this. There's a lot of sympathy for why people are protesting. The biggest disagreement is on how people went about it. Right. And we're seeing some arrests made. The biggest controversy this week has been the fact the Prime Minister has engaged the Emergency Act, which is very dramatic, basically going after the money. There's huge concern here about the fact that, you know, the majority of the millions of dollars that were fundraised actually came from out of country. A big part of that being coming from the U.S. And overseas, places like Russia, which would be much more concerning than any other place. And what happens, what powers does the government have in terms of seizure of bank accounts on some of those recipients and things like that? Well, we'll see what happens next week, because now, you know, once the protesters are gone, does the Prime Minister still follow through with some of this asset freezing and things like that? It has a lot of Canadians very sort of uneasy about this kind of measure.
Yeah, absolutely. It should. And if I'm reading some of the reports right, those most against the protests and the protesters are over on the East Coast, and as you go west, there's more and more support for the protests and what they stand for?
In the simplest form, yes. I think that's a good way to put it. And, you know, hey, I crossed at one of the Coots, Sweetgrass in Montana. Yep. That was one of the border crossings that was, you know, blockaded. I crossed there on Wednesday, and I'll tell you what, it's still, you know, there's no blockade. Traffic can go through. But there was probably a lineup of commercial trucks, like trying to get through, of about probably over 3 kilometers. And it just shows you the kind of backlog and disruption that this whole thing caused from a trade perspective.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Jim, last week when we talked with Randy Russell here on the show, we talked about how it may inspire some similar protests here in the U.S. And it sounds like that's starting to develop.
Absolutely. They're on their way. I'm for the truckers, and I think most Americans would be too.
Yeah. Davis, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to watch how the federal government responds to some of the protests, because aren't they coming right down Pennsylvania Avenue, Jim?
Oh, they are. Yeah. Congress will be out, but I wanted to ask Sean, can you recall your prime minister? Is there a no confidence vote or not?
We just had an election in the fall. Jim, I agree with that. But right now, the Conservative Party of Canada, who's the opposition, they just bounced their leader. So the Conservative Party has no leader currently. So chances of an election are very, very small. The other party, the NDP, is not strong in the funding department since we just went through an election. So this is kind of Trudeau's game in this minority government. I just wanted to sneak in. Alberta Premier Kenney and Saskatchewan Premier Mo, along with 16 U.S. governors, Republican governors, I will add, have written, co-authored a letter to Prime Minister Trudeau and President Biden, urging them to end this cross-border vaccine mandate for truck drivers immediately because of the disruption it is creating for commerce. And it was kind of the original spurring of what created some of these protests in the beginning. So we'll see if the White House and Trudeau carry forward on that and if they change their minds.
Well, right. And speaking of, of the White House's response, of the federal response, think of the mental gymnastics, the finesse that was put on, you know, cities in this country being on fire and that being labeled, well, this is a peaceful protest by some, you know, and now we have the, because if you look at the protest up there, I think it is Canadians being Canadians. As I understand, there were bouncy houses It was very cordial. Nothing was burnt down. Nothing was smashed, as near as I could tell. Yep. And I think our own truckers' strike would probably look the same way, or the protest. And so now we've got a federal government that's got a difficult balancing act to make, especially with an election coming up. How are they going to play this one?
It wasn't Portland, Oregon.
A lot of regular people, but there were some nefarious characters mixed in there, which
absolutely
that's the concern.
Taking advantage of a situation. There's no question about that. It will be interesting to watch not only the response of the federal government here in the U.S., but local governments as well as these protests start to fire up. More of the free-for-all coming up.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us. Got the rally going again today, Beej. Some strength in the grain markets being led by the hard red winter wheat market.
Yeah, not really anything new, I don't think, on that front. Maybe some concerns on the Russia-Ukraine side of things as the trade continues to monitor that situation and you know, multiple conflicting reports on that and throughout the week and probably likely to continue until something happens, either diplomatic resolve there or an actual invasion by Russia into Ukraine. So that situation continues to be monitored, just kind of back and forth stuff, and seems to be like the buyers are showing up today, showing a little bit more concern on that ahead of the weekend.
Okay. Had another bean sale announced this morning, didn't we?
Yep. So we continue unknown destination. So it's either China or unknown almost on a daily basis. And both old and new crop. This one was split with one cargo of old crop and two of new crop. But, just continue to see that demand come in. And South American crop woes are pushing more demand to the United States. And that's the bottom line on that one.
All right. Take us over to the livestock trade. Strengthen the hogs again, man.
Yeah, they just continue to charge higher. And if there's one constant right now, it's that the hog market's going to trade higher. Honestly, I kind of expected that we would see some corrective trade ahead of the three-day weekend. And we still might into the close. Yep. But here has been morning. It's firmer. Cattle futures, they are facing a little bit of profit taking ahead of the long weekend. So, that market's showing a little bit more of the trade I anticipated in hogs.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Beej. Have fun three-day weekend. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. And we've got the free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, and, of course, Davis Michelson is with us. Jim, there was, let's start with this. USDA has announced that they are going to start an investigation into the rise in input costs. What are the details here?
Well, the Department of Justice, their antitrust officials said that they're going to look into whether any company in the input area, seed, fertilizer, meat, have used the supply chain crisis to their undue advantage.
What a joke. What an absolute joke. We're not going to get any results for at least 2 years. And by that time, we could be looking at $400 anhydrous again.
You're right.
We don't have any of the details of the investigation into the meat industry.
No, you've had the same meat industry structure for the last 20 years. So it's a form of trying to find a scapegoat for this inflation, which, by the way, is not 7.5%. That's the nominal number they're putting out. It's much higher than that.
We love the free market until we don't like the free market.
Right.
It just grandstanding. To me, I don't know, Davis. You had just said that you weren't sure that there may be a point here.
No, I was protesting to we may be back down to 400 anhydrous in two years.
You don't think that's going to happen?
No.
Is that what I'm hearing?
In two years, I'll feel good if we're at 700.
Yeah, I hear you.
The reality is, you just.
I don't mean to be that guy. Sorry.
Yeah. The reality is, you just can't like. What do you do to change it? And how does, what role does government play in doing that? Like what's right. The Ronald Reagan quote? The scariest thing is somebody I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
I'm here to help. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like we're doing something. I just don't know what would actually change based on the outcome.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Chip, we've been chronicling this. From the very beginning, we've chronicled
last fall, the potential for the phosphates
to take off because of the investigation, and then they're shutting down plants in Europe. Okay, well now we've got a global problem, and there are holes in production over that entire period of time, and you get holes in production, and stuff tends to get expensive.
Right, right, absolutely. I'm not opposed to taking a look at some of the tariffs that are in place on any of the fertilizers, phosphates in particular. Let's go ahead and take a look at that and figure out if they should be removed, because scarcity could be an issue. Well, let's increase the availability by putting as much product into the marketplace as we can would be my take on it. So.
And how about taking some incentives to bring back some fertilizer production into this country that we let go in the late 70s and early 80s?
What are the odds that that's going to happen?
Well, they're trying to do it in semiconductors. Let's do it around the horn here. But I think we're going to see the conclusion of this, Chip, by the way. And it's going to happen in agriculture, too. It's going to be price rationing. We're going to get to levels.
Well,
That's going to lead to reduction in demand.
Okay.
You're going to need a more friendly energy regulatory environment, though, before you're going to attract any money into new startups and new fertilizer production here. I'm convinced of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to see the progressive left of the party go bonkers? Is, all of a sudden we're going to start building a bunch of fertilizer plants?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Bear. Early this week, I think on Monday, had to announce a force majeure on providing glyphosate to the marketplace. Had a glitch in production, and we're racking up the scarcity issues again on this, guys. When stuff like that happens, it's going to be very difficult to see any relief on the price side right now. Now next week we're going to talk with a crop advisor on some alternatives to the products that may be in the biggest shortfall of supply. All I know is that if you don't have it in your shed right now, you better start thinking about plan B and plan C on some of your crop protection and some of your burn down and everything when it comes to the 2022 growing season, because it doesn't sound right, Jim. You've been out and about talking with farmers. The level of concern is high.
It's huge, yeah. And a lot of them are uncovered from what I can gather wherever I go.
Yeah.
They're hoping prices are going to go lower. Hope is not a plan.
That's right.
Yeah. 2022 could be the year of the weed escape. This is going to put a lot of pressure on in the corn market, the pre-emerge products. Chip, you mentioned about having stuff on farm. I agree with you. And also, if I had it on farm, I'd put a big padlock, maybe two of them on the door as well.
chain around the whole barn. Yep.
Yeah, this is and the glyphosate is in really poor shape. It looks like glufosinate is it's tight. Some would say short. It's a little bit worse of a situation in the U.S. than it is in Canada. But you know, with all of these products, you know, you're going to need to plan ahead further than you have in the past, and be working on plan B and C, but stay away from hoarding, because that just makes this whole situation worse and compounds the problem.
Yep. Once you get into the hoarding, that's when the bullwhip economics kick in and we start to see the ripples that last not a couple of years, but into 5 years when things like that start happening. So no, you're exactly right. Exactly right. And it's all because of a lot of market volatility, guys. Last week, we had the USDA estimates on South American soybean crops, and they came down, but they didn't come down as much as the trade expected, and they sure didn't come down as much as what CONOB did. And now we've got this consistent buying coming into the market, in the export market. It's either unknown or China on a daily basis, and it could be China all the way around. And they're not just buying the crop that's in the bin. They're buying the crop that hasn't been planted yet, Jim. There's a great level of concern out around the world among the oilseed crushers that they're not going to be able to get the product that they want come, call it June, July, August, September, October.
And you're seeing it in the marketplace, Chip, with China canceling Brazil beans and buying U.S. because they don't think they're going to get the product from Brazil, and India buying U.S. soy oil. They booked a record 100,000 metric tons of soy oil, Reuters reported, and that's due to the concerns in South American supplies.
Yeah. Okay. Rio Grande do Sul put out a warning that a much, much, much higher the normal percentage of their crop may have no commercial value because of the drought and the damage that's been done to the crop. So even crop that has been harvested, once they go to crush it, it's like uncrushable. Doesn't produce meal or oil. It just kind of, flattens beans. But they want to change the rules and the regulations so that farmers can actually sell them. Well, what? If you can't crush them, who would buy them? I don't understand all of that. If there's no value, there's no value. That's the way it happens. So, really, really a dire situation. And then you go up to the northern production areas, and it's just the opposite. You know, beans are sprouting in the pod, and they can't get the moisture down. They can't get in the field to get anything done. It's a real mess. 125 million metric ton might not catch it on the downside.
Why do we not have a pro farmer crop tour for South America?
Well, actually,
hey, now
we got
something going here.
We did work with the fine people at Ag Rural in southern Brazil to put together a crop tour, and it. We helped them with understanding some of the logistics and everything on how to run it and the kind of information to gather and so on. Yeah. They've taken it to another level. They're out there for 3 weeks, Haney.
Wow.
Yeah. They go out there for 3 weeks. People join in, fall off for a couple of days, come back on. But there are people that are with them for the entire 3 weeks out there on that tour, and they cover thousands of miles. Thousands of miles. It's pretty fascinating.
But again, Chip, let's do the math. It looks like USDA's soybean export number for the U.S. is too low. Well, that's going to make the carryover situation even lower, which again means that we're going to have an acreage battle of the decade here between corn and soybeans. And if we don't get 90 million acres each, which we may not, you're off to the races. You're off to the races on the price.
It's going to be a big point of discussion next week at USDA's annual Ag Outlook Conference, isn't it?
It should be, and I think it will be, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's another virtual event. I should have said they're at. Yeah, it's another virtual event. So
yeah, and they'll release their numbers Friday morning unless they're leaked.
Right. That never happens. Never happens. We'll talk about another virtual event that's coming up next week. Jim and I are going to be involved in that one. That's next on the Free For All.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
You know, Haney, when you get right down to it, these guys really aren't like that Canadian either, are they?
Boy, we covered a lot of ground in the bumps today. I have to say that.
Does Nickelback have any? Do they have any makeout songs? Have they?
No.
Dipped into that
there
genre?
Is that one
for Chip. They all are though.
There's a couple, and I don't think I should even say the titles.
No, I think you should.
No, I don't think I should.
I'll find out for you, Planet Earth. I'll find out. I'll get the titles for you, Planet Earth.
Check our Twitter. That'll be great. Jim, Tuesday morning when we get back to work after having Monday off, bring your starter's pistol with you because we are kicking off the virtual portion of the Top Producer Summit Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock with a special session of Signal to Noise. What do you make of that?
It's live virtually.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you and I are up first on Tuesday morning, looking forward to it. So if you haven't signed up yet for the Top Producer Summit, just, you know what, Google it, Top Producer Summit. And look at the schedule that we've got lined up for the virtual offering. I mean, this is it's really, really good. The live sessions are just really, really fantastic. And then the on-demand sessions that were recorded this week in Nashville at Top Producer Summit are obviously really, really good as well. John Phipps is going to follow Jim and I tomorrow morning, and then Wednesday, the live sessions, you get Paul Niefer and Polly Dobbs talking about some succession issues, and it's a really, really good event. I hope you all take advantage of it. Guys, we talked about price, and producers at Top Producer Summit talked about price more than I recall at past Top Producer Summits. Now, that happens when you've got $16 old crop beans and $14.50 new crop beans, and when you've got, you know, approaching again, or I should say pushing through $6.50 again in corn, pushing up against $6 in the new crop corn. That's going to happen, but, Jim, when you've been out and talking, there's a real concern about missing out on a big move, isn't there?
Yeah, but I keep on telling them you can't go bankrupt making money. So, and to watch the funds, you know that, Chip. That's the best barometer. Anyone who tells a farmer they know where the highs are going to be are full of you know what. But right. At least you can watch the funds, and when they start pulling out, it can go down fast.
Yeah.
So I think that's the – and there's only been a few times – in the history of which we've been at these price levels for corn and soybeans. So we're in thin air here now.
Very much so. Very much so. I will throw this out. When we came off of the 13 high, the funds liquidated a huge amount of long positions and the market barely moved. There was some downside pressure on it. There was. But we pulled a lot of longs out of the market, both corn and soybeans, before there was much of a price reaction. And what it did was, once we got the updates and the commitments of traders report and saw all this liquidation had taken place, it was the realization that, oh, the funds aren't here to buy anymore. They're not going to defend. They don't have near as many long positions to defend. that's going to take some buying out, and that just let that market bleed, bleed, bleed for a long period of time. So you're right. The fund, the position of the funds in this in corn and soybeans, critical to watch. Critical to watch.
And depending on where you are, Chip, from a geographical perspective, you got different concerns. Like if you're, well, for example, the Western Canadian prairies, if you are in states like Montana, like I was in Glasgow, Montana a couple days ago, and she is dry. And your biggest concern is you're looking at things saying, like, I don't really feel like stepping out here and, you know, forward contracting, because I don't know what my production is going to be at all if we keep this dry bias. And so you're sort of relegated to the options in futures markets. And we know that not all producers are totally comfortable in that space in using those kinds of tools. So geographically, we got some different situations going on for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Montana, one of my favorite farmers from Montana, I caught up with him down in Nashville, and he'd been traveling for a while, and he had not seen the announcement that a judge has ruled to put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. And when I asked him about it, he looked at me like there was just no way that I could have been telling the truth. That there was no way that the federal government was trying to retake control of management of that species when it should be down to the state or even the district level on controlling the wolf populations out west. Because over the last 3 years, this guy has lost close to 100 calves to wolves. And there's been aggressive management of the pack that has been hunting his cattle. And the idea of putting the gray wolf back on the endangered species list, he looked at me like I was crazy.
Do many states have compensation for producers that lose livestock to wolves?
Yes. And when the wolf was on the list, the compensation was greater because management wasn't being done. So he may have more compensation coming his way if the wolf does make its way back on the list, but he says that is not the answer. The answer is to manage the numbers the way that the plan was going to work. And if they're on the list, that's not going to happen. Great conversation today, guys. Thank you so much. Jim Wiesmeyer, sure. We'll talk to you Tuesday morning.
Okay.
All right, Sean Haney, have a great weekend, buddy.
Cheers, everybody.
All right, Michelson, we'll talk to you this afternoon.
Hoodly doodly.
All right, when we talk with Davis again this afternoon, 206 Central, Mark Welch from Texas A&M will be with us.